woke up and I knew it all. A new day, a new way, and new eyes to see it all. Lord, your way of the mind and all. The sky is clearing and the night is bright.
For listening to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice, I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just tuning into this program, we're listening to Does Science Refute God? Is belief in God rational, or has science shown the existence of God to be so unlikely as to make belief irrational?
And here's where we are. We are about to hear brief closing statements from each debater in turn. Our motion is Science Refutes God. And here to summarize his position against this motion, Ian Hutchinson, professor of nuclear science and engineering at MIT.
Science is very important. It's our way of finding out about the regularities of the universe and this amazing natural world in which we live. Claiming more for science than is warranted by its competence does not promote science, it damages it. Talking as if science is all the real knowledge there is, as this scientistic motion does, alienates from science people who know better than to accept such an unjustified metaphysical extrapolation. It alienates intellectuals, particularly from other non-scientific disciplines, and it alienates non-intellectuals whose opinions are more intuitive and practical, but who know that their life is more than some reductionistic description in terms of atoms and molecules. People who make aggressive, anti-theistic claims on behalf of science are not acting as science's champions. They are bringing it into disrepute, and they are, in the end, misrepresenting science to the public. And therefore, I urge you, whatever may be your religious beliefs, to vote against this erroneous motion.
Thank you, Ian Hutchinson. Our motion is Science Refutes God. And here to speak in support of the motion, Michael Shermer. He is the founding publisher of Skeptic Magazine and a columnist for Scientific American.
When I was a Christian, I was in what I call the bubble. I was in the bubble where everybody around you believes. And in that bubble, the Christian worldview, like any other worldview, is internally consistent. It's inherently logical. It's reinforced by everybody around you until you step outside of the bubble. What happened with me is I went to graduate school and I started to study social psychology, anthropology, psychology of beliefs, and so on. And there I realized that none of those arguments actually make sense in and of themselves, the arguments for God's existence. What became clear to me is that what happens is you arrive at beliefs for non-rational, non-smart reasons, and then you back into it after the fact with rational reasons to justify it. We call this the confirmation bias. And so for me, I think there's overwhelming evidence that I've given you tonight that there's good anthropological, social science reasons why people believe in God that doesn't prove there's a God, but it proves that we create gods in our heads. In addition to that, I don't think there's any evidence to support that there actually is a God out there separate from our beliefs. So if you agree with me that the evidence points in that direction, that we constructed gods and not vice versa, I would urge you to vote on our side for the proposition that science refutes God.
Thank you, Michael Shermer. And that is our motion, Science Refutes God. And here to summarize his position against the motion, Dinesh D'Souza. He is the best-selling author of What's So Great About Christianity, and he is the director of 2016 Obama's America.
We're debating here, has science refuted God? And in some senses, we've been talking past each other. If I take a pot of water and put it on the stove, what am I trying to do? I'm trying to make a cup of tea. Now, Lawrence Krauss could come along and say that the molecules are heating up. He could give a full scientific account of what's going on, but he would have completely missed the purpose behind what I'm doing. The scientific explanation doesn't refute the purposeful explanation. It coexists alongside it, and so it is with God. Thank you.
Thank you, Dinesh D'Souza. Science Refutes God is our motion, and here to summarize his position in support of this motion, Lawrence Krauss. He is a theoretical physicist and director of the Origins Project at Arizona State University.
Human beings were clearly programmed by evolution to impute intentionality to the world around them. Meaning and purpose was infused in all everyday events to make sense of a dangerous, difficult, and uncaring world. So we had rituals behind the sun, the moon, the planets, the wind, the earth, the oceans, in all societies. The rise of our physical understanding has slowly caused us to do away with those many gods. We no longer have Mars, the god of war, Poseidon, the Greek god of the sea, Thor, the god of storms. And there's a reason for that. Science has taught us that instead of capricious beings, there's an order to nature. And that order does not appear to involve a divinity. There's no need for a divinity. Science has taught us also that we want to believe, in the words of Fox Mulder. And we should be skeptical of those desires. As the physicist Richard Feynman told us, the easiest people to fool are ourselves. As scientists, we have to train ourselves to be skeptical of wanting to believe. And human beings are also inevitably programmed to ask why, as we've heard it. But the why question is ill-posed, because it presumes purpose. What if there is no purpose? Does there need to be purpose? And science tells us there's no evidence of purpose. And therefore, science, by telling us there's no need for purpose, has refuted the need for God, and that's why you should support our position.
Thank you, Lawrence Krauss. And that concludes our closing statements. All right, first of all, I want to thank this panel of debaters for being so energetic, honest, intelligent. They brought it all. Thank you. Okay, so it's all in. I have been given the results. Remember, the team that changes the most minds is declared the victor, and here it is. Before the debate, 37% agreed with the motion, 34% were against, and 29% were undecided. So those are the first results. Remember, the team that has the highest percentage change is declared the winner. In the second vote, let's go first to the team that was arguing for the motion. Science refutes God. Their number went from 37% to 50%. That's a 13% increase. So the team arguing against the motion has to do better than 13%. Let's see how they did. Before the vote, 34%. The second vote, 38%. That's up 4%. It's not enough. The team arguing for the motion, Science Refutes God, has won the debate. Our congratulations to them. Thank you from me, John Donvan, and Intelligence Squared US. We'll see you next time.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Just 2 hours ago, Allied Air Forces began an attack on this small and helpless neighbor.
Our objectives are clear. While the world prayed for peace, the United States raped, pillaged, and plundered a tiny nation.
The victims were moms and dads.
Crushed.
Friends and neighbors.
Crushed.
Thousands of lives were suddenly ended by evil, unyielding anger.
And among those maimed and murdered, innocent children. These attacks continue as I speak.
What are we gonna do with all these criminals? What are we gonna do about all these crimes? Where are we gonna put all this anger? Such a strange wind blowing and such strange times.
Our military is powerful. The functions of our government continue without interruption.
Our objectives are clear. An Arab solution. Our operations are proceeding according to plan.
The road, I hear a dark clamor. Feet are wet in the ever-rising tide. Could we break the world beneath our pounding hammer? Can we build a cage so big to fit the whole human race inside?
Make no distinction between the
Arab leaders
and the children whose worlds have been shattered.
The United States, by stalling and threatening and defying the United Nations, exhausted every means at our disposal, met every overture of peace with open contempt.
God bless America.
Stands behind bars for growing reefer, while the ones who make the bullets murder untold millions, such is man.
Coming up next, Scott Horton interviews the other Scott Horton. They talk about the European Court of Human Rights' condemnation of Bush-era CIA torture practices within the rendition program. And they also talk about the U.S. justice system's failure to make the federal government officials accountable for crimes.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. On the line is the other Scott Horton, heroic anti-torture international human rights lawyer and writer, contributing editor, something like that, at harpers.org. He lectures at Columbia Law School in New York City, and he's the former chair of the New York Bar Association's Committees on Human Rights and on international law, something I forget now. Welcome back to the show, Scott. How are you?
Hey, great to be with you.
I meant to mention your blog at harpers.org, no comment. Can I ask you why it is that you've written so little at your great blog, no comment, over the last few months?
Oh, well, mostly because I've been overseas doing a lot of work on a couple of new projects, so I just haven't had that much time to write. And also at Harper's, we just did a complete overhaul of our website, so we were taking everything down and putting up a new website, which is now up and running.
Yeah.
But I promise to make amends and write more.
Okay, good. But you're not gone.
No, definitely not.
I've actually gotten concerned emails from people saying, what happened to the other Scott? So.
Oh, no, still around.
Yeah, there you go. I'm sure out there doing heroic work against torture and such around the world. So, let's see. European court condemns CIA extraction techniques as torture. That's pretty precedent setting, isn't it? The European court. Which European court and what exactly did they condemn?
Well, it's the European Court of Human Rights, which is, I mean, depending on how you reckon it, may be viewed as the highest court in Europe. It's a court of ultimate jurisdiction that deals with the European Human Rights Covenant from all the European member states, 25 countries altogether. This is the first time we've had a high court deal with the legality of the CIA's extraordinary renditions program. And there was, we have a number of courts that have been presented with that issue. And in the United States, they've all ultimately ducked it, saying that they had no jurisdiction to deal with it because of state secrecy claims brought by the U.S. government. But the Grand Chamber of the European Court for Human Rights did not duck it. It took the issue head on, and it ruled, in fact, that the extraction preparation techniques that were used by the CIA did constitute torture. It found that Khalid al-Masri was tortured when he was seized and dealt with on an airfield in Macedonia, and was later tortured when he was moved by the CIA to their prison in Afghanistan. So it's a remarkable decision, very important decision, and they awarded damages to al-Masri, but more importantly, at the end, they castigated two governments that were involved, saying, this is a clear case where an individual was tortured and you failed to conduct a proper criminal investigation and bring charges against the people who perpetrated this torture. And these are people who are known, of course. They're a group of CIA agents. And in fact, Macedonia, which is one of the countries involved, was complicit in this. They turned the guy over to the CIA. They didn't actually torture him. But the court found that Macedonia was liable for the torture because it turned al-Masri over to the CIA. And then the other government was Germany, and the court castigated Germany for failing to criminally investigate and act on the matter. And, of course, we know through WikiLeaks that the U.S. Intervened, aggressively pressured the German government to shut down its criminal investigation. So here we have the highest court in Europe criticizing the German government for doing that and insisting, in fact, now that the German government reopened the case and continue the prosecutions.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so I got a lot of questions already. First of all, when you say that the other courts had ducked it based on the excuse of U.S. secrecy, was it somehow they were saying that they were bound by American claims of secrecy on documents that they had, or they were just saying because of American secrecy, we don't have enough information to proceed, or what?
Well, I'm talking about courts in the United States.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were saying
that have been presented with this were U.S. District Court cases, and a court of appeals cases.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were saying European courts had refused, but this one had not. But when the European courts had refused in the past, it was because they said, well, we have to give the Americans a chance to apply the law to these things first before we act. But I guess that time's over now.
That's right. So Europeans had basically ducked to give the U.S. a first chance to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and now who was this Khalid al-Masri? Did he arrange the crashing of the planes into the towers?
Nothing to do with it. I mean, he had the great misfortune of having a name which, but for two letters, is the same as a figure who really was an important conspirator in al-Qaeda. But this Khalid al-Masri was a greengrocer from Ulm, Germany. He had been on a trip to the Balkans and showed up in Macedonia. There, the Macedonian authorities, noting his passport, noting his name was on the list, flagged it for the Americans, saying, hey, is this the guy you're looking for? And then the Americans, looking at it, decided that, oh, this must be the guy. And this involves a fairly prominent CIA officer who now heads the global anti-jihad unit. Her name is Alfreda Frances Bukowski. She was the person who was in charge of the effort in Macedonia, and she decided, notwithstanding when the guy was picked up, he said, you know, I'm a greengrocer from Germany. And the initial inquiry into it showed, it was right. Everything he said was checking up. But nevertheless, Alfreda decided that her gut told her that he really was a terrorist and that therefore he should be tortured, abused, and sent off to Afghanistan. So she directed that. So, you know, I mean, she's the person who's principally responsible for his mistreatment.
Mm-hmm. Well, although there's nothing anybody can do about her other than an American court, right?
No, I mean, if she ever, I mean, one of the problems she's got as a CIA officer right now and a very high position is if she leaves the United States, she could immediately be arrested. I was told, in fact, that she was at one point selected for a posting to London, and the British government said, thank you, but no thank you. If Alfreda showed up here, we'd probably have to arrest her.
So many of our high-level officials are fugitives from the law. Have you noticed that?
Right. So Alfreda, who, you know, has been a regular visitor to the White House and a briefer of President Obama, is also a fugitive from justice.
Amazing.
Involved in very serious crimes.
Yeah. All right. Now, let's see. What else was I going to ask you here? Oh, now, in the case of this court, is this a matter of all the politics are pushing toward this sort of finding anyway, and this is, you know what I mean? Or is it that this is really the law being applied no matter the pressure?
No, in fact, all the politics were pushing in the other direction. I mean, there was heavy political pressure brought on the governments and others involved to drop these cases and not look at them. And the European Court of Human Rights has developed a really outstanding reputation of putting politics and political influence aside and dealing with these cases only on the merits. And in fact, if you look at their jurisprudence and rulings over the last several years, they make very clear that, you know, no governments are immune, and they've handed down important rulings involving Russia, Ukraine, Kazakhstan, Turkey, the United Kingdom, you know, many, many powerful states, and they've said, you know, you violated basic human rights standards, so they've upheld victims' claims repeatedly.
Huh. You know, it really does make the American system of law look like a joke. We're supposed to be the model, but it just makes such a mockery, especially on this issue, when there's so many names that we know of the guilty, you know, from Dick Cheney on down.
You've painted up your lips and rolled and curled your tinted hair. Ruby, are you contemplating going out somewhere? The shadow on the wall tells me the sun is going down. Don't take your love to town. It wasn't me that started that old crazy Asian war, but I was proud to go and do my patriotic chore. And yes, it's true that I'm not the man I used to be. company. It's hard to love a man whose legs are bent and paralyzed. And the wants and the needs of a woman your age, Ruby, I realize. But it won't be long, I've heard them say, until I'm not around. Your love to town. She's leaving now, 'cause I just heard the slamming of the door. The way I know I've heard it slam 100 times before. And if I could move, I'd get my gun and put her in the ground. Take your love to town. Oh, for God's sakes, turn around.
And now for something completely different.